Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, I'm here for real this time. Welcome to PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host, Kelly Wells, and you can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games. Sitting in with the two-man booth here this week. We are talking NXT for August the 1st, 2023. Is it a busy show or is it just that, I don't know, maybe it is. They came exploding out of the last PLE, Great American Bash. I forgot what it was called. That was a real hesitation there. So I don't remember this stuff. In one ear and out your mother. So we came out of that show with all the, it didn't seem like they had anything going at the end of Great American Bash. So it's pretty heartening that we got a lot of stories going on tonight. A good show, lots of business, and a big, big tease for Two Dimes, who was killed, but we thought might come back to life today. It's not just for the comics, folks. You can do it on wrestling, too. We have seen it before, but instead, sadly, it was not Two Dimes. It was just Santos Escobar in the main event. Tony D and Stax and Santos Escobar defeating Gallus in what was simply a feel-good story. This was the one thing that didn't lead to something further down the road. This was just the end of a story. Tony D ends up pinning Mark Coffey after 9:14 in a match that was messy and busy and just to feel good for the folks that that probably the darkest and longest blood feud they've had in NXT over the past few years ended with these two guys just showing up and hanging out, doing a match. Santos let a lot of things go that Tony D did. But on the other hand, Tony D was so incompetent. Maybe he just wasn't scared of him anymore. So maybe there's that. You can call us 515-605-9345 or email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. Bruce, what did you think of the main event?
Well, I'm Bruce Hazelwood. You can find me at B_Lee253. And as you said, the main event was just pretty much a feel-good story. People got in their moves. And as long as Joe Coffey didn't take the pin or the submission, then you, with Gallus, you have the right decision here in terms of them losing. So, yeah, you and me have been talking about Two Dimes being coming back to the fray for a while now, ever since his 1 year little probationary period with WWE was up about a month and a half ago. And big tease here, as you said, but it made a lot of sense that it would be Santos Escobar, based off of how D'Angelo phrased his conversation on the phone to the person on the other end. So there's that, but as you said in your report, you have to do a lot of mental gymnastics to put that aside and think about these two work together, but these are also babyface mafioso, so there's that. The what I think was notable here was that Santos Escobar got a big pop in his return, and while he's the number one contender, they still gave the pin to the NXT regulars, which I'm just curious because of the timing between this and his upcoming United States Championship match. So I figured it'd be another way to put him over strong and get people ready for the match. But I guess throughout the match, he was the only one that really didn't take any damage and did most of, and was in there doing a lot of damage himself. So in one way, you can look at it and see that he still looks strong here tonight. The fans are still behind Tony D and Stax, so that's good. The thing with Gallus, though, is not what you do with them both as a tag team, or I guess three. One as a tag team, two with Joe Coffey, and then three as a stable, because I feel like, and he said it on Sunday, they won the tag team championship, and then it just seemed like they stalled out, and then they lost it kind of unceremoniously in a ho-hum match after months of build-up that you know, you would think would be at least one of the ones that had a gimmick attached to it on Sunday, but there wasn't. So that's what I'm concerned about moving forward for Gallus as a whole, or, you know, Gallus individually and as a whole. But for D'Angelo and Stax, it's, I don't know. They may have been thinking about Stax turning on D'Angelo, and it might still be coming, but I wonder if they're pushing it back more because of the reactions they're still getting from the two and how the storyline played out with Gallus.
All right. That was, yes. It. Gallus, you know what? I got nothing more than that. Like, what is this right now? It's just, it seems like they're liked enough to be champions, but not liked enough to do anything with them as champions. I don't know what else to say about that. All right. That was your main event. We got three emails. We're going to go to one right away because it did have some Great American Bash stuff in it. This is from Kevin Catani. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. I listened to your post-Great American Bash roundtable, and it sounded like our two coverages had a lot of similarities in our opinions. The only big difference we had was in my appraisal of Roxanne Perez's sister's acting. But other than that, Greg and I were right there with you all. Let me stop right there and say, when an actor and a non-actor disagree about acting, fill in the rest of the sentence. Yep, that is how that was. Also, I don't think she was acting. I don't know that she is smart to the business. I really don't. Okay, moving on with the rest of the email. Tonight was a good follow-up show. I'm excited for Dragon Lee versus Dom next week because it should be a good showing for Lee, but more so because after my comments on Sunday night, a face is finally bringing a buddy to even the odds. I don't think Lee will take the belt this time, but I do think gold is in his near future. Oh, boy. Dom is really in a fun position here because literally any match we're going to kind of assume is the one where he loses. And he's got a pretty sizable rub to give here just because of how much people want to see him lose. He says, was this the blow-up to the Mobsters versus the Hooligans? I loved seeing Santos back in NXT, but do you think there will be a rematch for the belts between Gallus and Tony D and Stax? And if not, who's next? I still keep waiting for the Dyad to split, but do you think they re-signed? Could they be next in line? Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB and Bonus Point. Office hours are now over. The Professor Kevin Picatani, PhD. Yeah, I feel like Gallus and Tony D and Stax is done. But if it's not them, I don't know. There's always Inafe and Blade who can lose to another set of champions since they've lost to like every set of champions for the last four or five, it feels like. Yeah. As for the Dyad, man, your guess is as good as mine with this thing that got going on with the Creeds. Got issues with that. Because the Creeds come off kind of heelish here. They lost a match. They were supposed to leave. They didn't leave. And yeah, they're kind of doing heelish things. I don't know who I'm supposed to think is going to be next and what I'm even supposed to be rooting for. So anything on Catani's email there, Bruce?
Yeah, I'm going to just repeat a lot of what I said on the roundtable, but since not everyone has VIP, I think it's worthwhile here. So if I think about during my report on Sunday, at the end of it, I said, you know, the interaction between Ripley, Dominic, and Dragon Lee leads me to believe that we're going to see Rey Mysterio on NXT. Lo and behold, we see Rey Mysterio on NXT, and he's going to show up next Tuesday as well, be in the corner of Dragon Lee for the North American title match. And then I think about what you also told us about, what Shawn Michaels said about Dragon Lee, and that there are big things in store for him. And as I have been telling people from the beginning, be patient, be patient. He's going to take a loss. It's okay. He can bounce back. It's not a big deal. Probably won't win next Tuesday. And what I said on Sunday was, it's no mercy, right? At No Mercy is where we'll probably see Dragon Lee dethrone Dominic Mysterio and become the new North American champion, and then from there start his big push as Shawn Michaels told or said on the conference call. So with Dragon Lee and Dominic Mysterio, I think this is a good. It's a seamless way to bring in Rey Mysterio to the storylines of the NXT because of both of the connections that these two have to him. So they did a good job we've been talking about this since they've been doing this the last couple months, but they've been doing a real better job of making sure that when talents from Raw or SmackDown come to NXT, they're in a storyline basis for them being there rather than them just showing up for the most part. So it makes a lot of sense why Rey Mysterio would show up here, especially because he still has issues with his son, or Eddie's son. And then Dragon Lee's inspiration, a lot of Mexican-American wrestlers too, and especially those who don the mask, is Rey Mysterio. He called Rey Mysterio the greatest luchador of all time tonight. So to me, I feel like eventually that championship change is going to happen at No Mercy. And I think Gallus and D'Angelo Stacks, I think they're done. I think this is a blow-off. So, again, just not sure what comes of it for, especially Gallus.
Let's go to our champion, Carmelo Hayes. He was busy. He had a not-so-breakup with Trick Williams. Still very painful. It doesn't matter if the other person says it's not you, it's me. It's still happening to you. And it's bad for those of us who have been cheering them on. I feel like losers must feel who get into big celebrity pairings and they're like obsessed with them. Like I remember Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman got divorced. My friend Missy goes, they were so good together. And I was like, what are you basing that on? Like, how do you know that? Like we literally never saw him. But of course we are bigger losers because we are sad about wrestlers breaking up. So Trick and Mello, Trick's got to be his own man. I can't argue with any of the reasons Trick, the character, is doing this. Of course he's doing this. He does have to be his own man. And damn it, he got to be good enough that it makes sense for him to go out and be his own man. So as great as it is to have him as a hype man, I understand he didn't get into the business to be a hype man. Like he can be the best hype man, or he can be a very good version of like his own man. And I'm going to be happy to see it. But if this act doesn't make the main roster, it'll feel, I don't know if it'll be a missed opportunity exactly. You know what? It's going to, when I see, ask me in 5 years if it was a missed opportunity, and I will tell you with the benefit of all the hindsight in the world what I think. So they're splitting. Trick is going to be heading off and facing Ilya Dragunov next week. Your main event was that Gallus match, but the main event segment was a very brief pre-taped interview with a very intense Ilya Dragunov saying that, yes, he is. And he said, Trix, you're not done with me. That's perfect because I am not done with you. And they'll be going next week in a show that's already kind of stacked. Carmelo himself also had a scene with Wes Lee where Wes was taking everything personally. Hayes tried to calm him down, tell him not to wallow in self-pity. And, of course, Lee threw a tantrum. Wes Lee showing a side of himself that he hasn't had to show in a long time because he's been winning. But has lost the last 3 weeks in a row, and they end up running afoul of Noam Dar and Oro Mensah, and Mensah, as Vic kept saying. But Vic can't say Fraser, so it's all guesswork for that guy.
Look, with the Rey Mysterio thing, I tweeted, did he just say booyaka booyaka? And he liked my tweet. Get off your phone, Vic. Pay attention.
Dude, it's like Morrow mostly tweeted throughout the show. And I'm like, Morrow, you talk nonstop. How do you still also read tweets? I don't know how he did it.
I should clarify. He liked the tweet during that next commercial break.
Yeah. Morrow would like tweets in the middle of speaking. It's like, he's speaking now. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Noam Dar and Oro, I'll get back to you on his last name, defeated Carmelo Hayes and Wes Lee when Dar pinned Lee. Wes Lee's cardiac kick just has trouble hitting the right guy. He's real, real good at hitting the wrong guy. This time he hit Carmelo Hayes and left himself open to Dar's finisher. So Metaphor gets a win, which they could use at this point, I would say. And Lee was not done with Hayes at the end. And I like that both of these characters stayed within their worlds. Hayes has bigger fish to fry, and it's a bummer that he lost this match, but he's like, I got things to take care of. And Lee, this is what's going on for him right now. So he's got beef with Hayes. So I don't know that this goes all the way to No Mercy, but it might have legs. And if that's what they're doing, this was a real, real good first step, Bruce.
Yeah, I'll hit that part first and come back to Trick since we're on Lee and Hayes right here. The match itself was what you'd expect, probably the best match of the night. Honestly, the Mid-Show Main Event, four great wrestlers and they're going at it. And while Wes Lee does have issues landing the cardiac kick on the right person, his accuracy rate is usually 100% in terms of landing the move. So there's that. Even though it's one that has a high probability of miss because it's so just up to chance, I guess. But, Noam Dar, he is just such a treat to watch on TV. Their entrance when they posed, that is just that was so good. I was just laughing so much. They know what they're doing. Their characters are fully confident in what they're portraying and who they are. So, and him just having this new life with this, as they put in the graphic, the quote, Heritage Cup, just has me rolling. I really just love what they're doing. And as you said in your report, he's showing different things every week, depending on the context and who he's interacting with. So it shows from that kid in the Cruiserweight Classic who you thought was a waste of space to now being one of the best things on NXT. It's been a long journey and also shows just how versatile and skilled Noam Dar is in terms of character portrayal. So to Hayes and Wes Lee, like you said, gotta love how each character stayed within who they are and have been portraying. Lee visibly frustrated after not just losing the last 3 weeks, but he was the one who took the pin in the last 2 weeks, including in the triple threat match on Sunday. So the frustration is understandable. The reaction from Carmelo Hayes is also understandable because, like, you think that you're the only one going through things, but I've had the pressure of holding this at the top for how long now, and I just went through a match where I could barely breathe, and I'm sitting here trying to console you, man. You're lashing out at me when I'm not your enemy kind of thing, right? So I liked that part, and then I also, at the end, when Lee tried to that Hayes just defusing the situation. Like, look, man, this ain't my deal. And he just walking away and leaving Wes Lee to stew. So I compared Wes Lee to basically devolving like Uchiha Sasuke or Majin Vegeta and just really got to find a way to try and find any way to gain new power to a certain extent. And I guess with Wes Lee being kind of a video game anime type character in his presentation and stuff too, it kind of works. So to the Trick in Carmelo thing, what I really appreciate about the segment is what you said too, is Trick has every reason to say what he said, and the context in which he couched all that was also justifiable and believable. He does already have an out in terms of someone he can set his eyes on for a single shoot if that's Ilya Dragunov. But he also didn't blame anything or his position on being with Carmelo Hayes. He just gave Carmelo Hayes his respect as champion, as performer, and he's just like, look, I'm just not a sidekick right now. Right now I need to go do this for me. And sometimes you got to step out and do your own thing. And to Hayes' credit, he just said, I got your back. And while we might not see them, kind of together, as we have seen them move forward, it's probably going to be one of those things where when one of them meets a partner or someone in their corner, they're going to turn into each other, and it's, you know, it all makes sense. And I'm excited to see what comes of Trick's singles run, because every time he's been in the ring the last several months, just improves every single time. His mic work, we already know, is impeccable. His character work is great. So if he can keep getting that ring work to a spot that's above average, and I think he's going to get there well past that, he's going to make himself a lot of money with his size, his character, his boxing background. I think him and Carmelo Hayes both have a bright future ahead of them.
All right, let's go to an email that involves most of the stuff that happened on the show. A lot of stuff here from JB from Detroit. Number one, is there any chance that Melo versus Trick culminates in a face versus face match for Melo's NXT title, with Melo losing to graduate to the main roster permanently at, let's say, Stand and Deliver? I had not thought of Trick as the one to take it from him, but that would be a heck of a story. I'd be on board. Two, I like Dirty Dom using the best luchador of all time angle to open the door to a feud with Dragon Lee. It was a seamless segue. Also, in what way will Rey and Rhea get involved next week in the Dragon Lee Dom match? Bruce, you tell me, how will they get involved?
Rhea's going to put Rey through the announce table with the Riptide.
Yeah. Okay.
And then she's going to help Dom change.
There you go. Number three, will Wesley's recent losing streak be the impetus for a heel turn? It sure seemed this way in his interaction with Melo tonight, both backstage and post-match. NXT tends to like to see both the face and the heel side of a wrestler before they're moved up. Yeah, I thought that maybe they were trying the other side here. The only thing that holds me back from that is Wesley is so clearly meant to be in the role he's been in for the last few months that I think it's possible that all they're trying to do is see what he can do when he's in a more serious feud, because many of the feuds, much of what he did was lighthearted as NXT champion, and this isn't. Four, given the crowd rejection that we saw towards Gable Steveson at the GAB, is there any chance that we see a heel tag team with him and his real-life brother Damon Kemp? I mean, it's always possible. They had somebody who was – they had Velveteen Dream, and he started getting booed mercilessly as a babyface for non-wrestling reasons, and instead of pulling him from TV and – and, you know, firing him, they turned him heel. I thought it was ridiculous. I don't know everything about the Steveson story. Nobody really does. But I know it's not good. But with Dream, I mean, the stuff was out there. I mean, so much of this stuff was out there. There was... like, we all saw how good he was. It's a real bummer. But, I mean, you got to be responsible. Anything more on that, Bruce?
All I will add is that if that were to happen, they would need a big character shift from Damon Kemp, because he's been trolling his brother and Eddie Thorpe, and who else was it that helped him? But he's been basically just trolling them and saying, like, if he had someone real to help train him for his match or whatever and whatnot. So it could be one of those, like, big brothering the little brother to make a tag team, but it would take a big change for Damon Kemp at this point. And right now, well, tag team might be the best option for Steveson. It's probably not going to be with his brother.
You know, Damon Kemp, for me, he's the guy, he's kind of my my forgotten sons. Like, if he left, it would take me like 6 months to notice, I think. I don't know what it is about Kemp. He does not stick. When he shows up, I'm like, yeah, him. And there's like, I don't know. I think it would take me a long time to notice if he was gone. So, The old Apple Valley brothers need a little something. Number five, isn't the Killer Instinct angle that Dana Brooke is pushing on Kalani Jordan awfully similar to the Thea Hale angle in a very short period of time? I didn't think about it. I guess it is. Dana Brooks' acting is so flat that it kind of made me not notice that it was the same thing. I guess it is, but a new babyface needing killer instinct is, I don't know that one can be overused. Do it in a different way every time, but it is something that is kind of a rite of passage more than a gimmick. Six, Miami Vice or Miami Heat, as suggested by Vic, would be a great tag team name for Vice and Lopez if it would be possible considering trademarks. I'm going to say it would not be possible considering trademarks. Miami Heat, there is no chance. Miami Vice, maybe. I don't know who's holding that. Wait, they made another Miami Vice, didn't they? There's like another Miami Vice out there right now. Or maybe there was.
Yeah, they made one more recently.
Okay. So somebody's got the rights to that. Now, they'll go out of their way. Like, they found out they couldn't name him the Incredible Hulk Hogan, but then they made a deal with Marvel. Like, on the back of all Hulk Hogan's cards, it says copyright WWE and Marvel, because they had to, like, they had to get permission to use that name. I don't think that they would do that for Lola Vice and Electra Lopez at this point. Seems like that would be a real big cost to talk to the Miami the Hell Heat and see if they could use that name. But you're right, those are both perfectly decent names. But they're only perfectly decent names because they're already out there being used. So I don't know. I don't know what that name is, but I'm good at tag team names. So give me a week to not think about it, and I'll forget to give you a name next week. Number seven. Why does Baron Corbin look like he's wearing the first prototype of a bulletproof vest? I don't know why he wasn't wearing what he wore. Did he only enter to it on Sunday
he only entered to it on Sunday, and he took it off for the match, just like he did tonight.
I guess I thought it was kind of okay. Kind of in the middle of Corbin. I don't know that I've ever thought Corbin looked overly cool. The Lone Wolf was the closest. I thought it was kind of a try hard, but whatever. I think this is fine for who he is. Any comment on that, Bruce?
I like this look better than what he had been wearing the last 6 years, and I like the music to go along with it. It's much better than what he had as a king and as Happy Corbin. So, also in his backstage segment with Chase Hugh earlier in the night, he was just so good at making you want to punch him in the face. So I got to give him credit there.
JB threw on right at the end, for what reason would Escobar have agreed to be D'Angelo and Stack's third partner? They should have made it a point to at least mention that. Yeah, they got lazy here. They put together a thing where they could tease that it was Two Dimes, but then for all the same reasons, with all the same wordplay that they did, it also made sense that it was Escobar. And I thought I might be seeing Escobar when I saw those shoes. I don't even know if I've seen him wear those shoes, but when he stepped out, I was like, it's going to be Santos Escobar. And even then I was like, that really, really kills everything they did a year and a half ago, but whatever. It was all very high concept, silly. If I'm being honest, like, I know it was a long feud that supposedly was one of the great feuds, but I always thought there was a pretty heavy element of silliness to it because the Mafia. Anything more on that? If not, I will move forward. Some matches.
I think I caught during the conversation, you said, like, after this will all be square, there's nothing else between us. So I think it was one of those ways to just clean your hands of everything, going back to their feud. And, you know, remember, in the end, Tony D'Angelo won. So, yeah, I think that's what the phone call is for, but it wasn't as explicit as it should have been.
All right. I fought real, real hard with my internet today. It's not the internet, it turns out. It's my TV has stopped. The internal processor seems to be mostly blown, and I cannot play apps on my TV, which makes it real, real hard to watch. I watched this show, folks, on my laptop, which is a decent sized laptop, but I watched it side by side. As Vic would say, picture in picture, but that would be really stupid of me to actually do. I watched them side by side. Well, one side was the small screen of the show, and the other side was a very small window for me to type. Real, real pain in the ass to do that. So the good news is now I can finally tell my wife I really do need that TV that I've been wanting. I sold TVs for a long time, for a very long time, for 15 years, high-end TVs specifically. So unfortunately, I have very expensive tastes. But I don't have the size in the cutout in my wall for more than 55 inches. So that helps keep the cost down.
It sure does.
Because that is literally as big as I can put in this spot. I would need to redo the room, and I'm not a guy who redoes rooms. That's not my deal. Okay. Lyra of Valkyria versus JC Jane was the first match. That was all the way for me to say I barely saw any of this match. Every 10 seconds, I got about 2 seconds. So I know that Lyra won it, and I know that they didn't follow up with any Rhea Ripley afterward. Seems like maybe they forgot to do something with her. I don't know. But Lyra, I sure do like her, and it seems like her ship's coming in. Tell me anything that I may have missed from this opener.
Sure. So the match itself was actually pretty good. Again, JC Jane just didn't have chemistry with GD Doll in terms of singles matches. I'm just seeing it. And we saw that tonight with her match with Lyra Valkyria. Both of them look pretty good. Lyra Valkyria, ever since Rhea Ripley and her had the interaction, not just last week, but before then, she's sort of brought out more of that hard-hitting style she had in UK that she sort of tempered a little bit on her coming to NXT stateside. And we saw that more tonight as well. A lot of stiff kicks and stiff strikes in general, which she keeps doing more and more, which I like to see. And then, as you said, there was no follow-up, but I'm thinking that the follow-up will come next week sometime. They just had a lot packed into tonight's show, which they always do, but maybe with as much as they already had Rhea Ripley on the TV tonight, they felt it was better to save her and Lyra have another segment until next week. But that's really all I have else to add.
All right. We got, let's go to Andre Chase versus Baron Corbin. This started earlier in the night when Chase U was trying to have a scene where Andre Chase himself was trying to console Thea Hale, but at the same time, this is not who she wants to console her, because he's the one who threw in the towel and he's the reason she's not the champion anymore. I think that this is a wonderful little piece of business for everyone involved to show a little something different in their characters. And Thea did a really great job in a role that is so rarely subtle. She was asked to do a lot of things that were, and they worked. Typically, when you see somebody, like in acting class, when I got to be sophomore, junior, senior, and you saw people coming up, and the people who do so much that they're annoying, that they're overacting to the nines, and they're annoying. And then you see the people who are real flat, and they're just giving you nothing. They're not, like they're not listening to their scene partner, really. They're just kind of acting within themselves. Even though that's the one that's easier to watch, the one that's annoying and overacting, you know, is going to be better every single time, because they can be pulled back and they can learn to do less. Those ones that give you nothing right out of the gate, every now and then you pull them out of their shell. But that is a few and far between. So I'm not surprised Thea can pull it back, but I am surprised that the first time we saw her asked to do that, it worked this well. Her sulking was not overacting, but it was funny. Sitting on the steel steps, just kind of looking forlorn often, and she's holding the towel, so you know what the ending is going to be. But then they kind of do a little twist ending where she throws it to Baron Corbin, and he's supposed to throw it back. Butterfingers, that's why he played O-line and was not asked to catch, because he caught it, and he dropped it, and then he picked it up and threw it out. So, and then finishes with End of Days after the faces start squabbling on the outside. I thought that was a nice touch because you thought it would just be the towel. But of course she threw it. So now there's got to be follow-up here. We've said it before, dude. I don't think they created Chase U with the intent of them being one of the things that we looked forward to absolute most every week. But oftentimes they are.
Yeah. I think what really made Thea Hill's performance tonight, just for both of us, be received so well, is we've all known that pouty kid, and she acted just like that pouty kid. Even in the backstage interview segment, she started yelling at Chase before Corbin got there, and then at the end, when Chase put his hand on her shoulder to comfort her, she immediately shrugged her shoulder forward to brush his hand off. So I think a lot of what she did was just relatable to people, either because they've been that person or they know that person and have seen it before. And there were subtleties to this, too, because like you said, she was sitting on the steps, but then when Duke was blocking her way to see Chase getting his ass whipped, she subtly pushed him aside to give herself a better view. And then, you know, she walked away at the end, and that kind of just, after the towel was thrown back, and she just, she's so young, and yet she understands, she has a good IQ for wrestling, and a good sort of understanding of how much is exactly enough for her character portrayal. And as if she just continues to improve in the ring as she has been, she'll be fine. The only thing that's going to hold her back a bit might be her size, because even with Triple H running things, that size could still be a hindrance. But beyond that, she's doing so well. And to the match itself, all I will say is, no matter what, the End of Days always just looks so clean, so smooth, and from what I can gather, one of the safer moves to take as well. So,
I strongly used to dislike Baron Corbin for years, and even then I was like, God, the End of Days is so, so cool. It's a great-looking move. Yeah, it's everything you want in a wrestling move. Looks like crazy impact, but is incredibly controllable. And Baron has always been extremely safe for his opponent.
Like, deep kick as well.
Oh, God, I know. A 1-2 punch. Yeah, if he hadn't been laying it on so thick with the lone wolf, I probably would have liked him out of the gate, but I didn't. Okay, Eddie Thorpe versus Dijak. Dijak over in 422. I think that this was a good time for Dijak to get a win because he hasn't been getting too many of them. And Eddie Thorpe, I think, is a good time for a loss, because if you let somebody get on a runaway train too early, it's tough. You can keep Tatanka undefeated for 2 years, but when you don't have any championship matches with him, it does kind of look stupid. But Eddie Thorpe needs something to overcome, and now it can be Dijak. I know that Tatanka was happening around the time you were born. but I sure liked him at the time. I look back and I kind of wonder why, but I liked him at the time quite a bit.
Because he wasn't Hogan?
That's always a good reason to not like somebody. He and Hogan didn't, I don't know if they were there at the same time very often that first time. You know, he was there longer. But yeah, he started in late 91. Hogan was on the verge, kind of.
Yeah.
He was just sort of on TV for a while. Their paths never really crossed, as far as I can remember. The other man
coming off of Hogan, you know, he was just so different in his presentation, yeah, and
right,
what he did. So,
sure. Yulisa Leon and Valentina Feroz, they're so good, and they so never get to win against Lola Vice and Electra Lopez. a mistake-free match for Lopez. So bonus, good action here. I'm just bummed that we don't get to see Leon and Feroz win because they've got all the right energy. They got the right moveset. They're cool. I don't understand why they have to lose all the time. I get that they're the best in an enhancement role of anybody on the show right now, but they're also better at the other stuff, so maybe they should just be stars. I don't know, 3 minutes and 29 seconds. Lola Vice wins with essentially Black Mass, and those are your last two matches before we get to some of the outside segments.
Yeah, so on this last match, ooh, those coughs came out of nowhere. I joked in a Slack, and it's a joke, people, that Lola Vice's Black Mass was better because she didn't slap her thigh. It's a joke. Before you all come at me and throw things at me, which is a joke. But the thing about, I love Valentina Feroz. I just feel like she has all the makings of what I like in a pro wrestler. She's one of the ones where, you know, you see them in the beginning, like, oh, that's someone I want to watch. And then you see them throughout their journey, and it's just so rewarding to see the improvement. But as you said, they don't win. And when you said, who else are they going to have? You're not just thinking Dana Brooke and Kalani Jordan if they weren't involved in this whole, like, singles thing, which eventually is going to lead to a match between them. But, yeah, the thing about Vice and Lopez is, we talked about this on Sunday. Excuse me. The combination of them, I feel like, has given Lopez a confidence she didn't have before. So that, and that confidence has come through in her work in the ring. Right, there's less hesitancy, which when you have less hesitancy, there's going to usually be less mistakes. And she seems to just be following through more on her attacks and on her moves. And having someone like Vice who helps make her feel comfortable, at least that's what it appears from the outside, like, make her feel more comfortable, I think, is one reason that we've seen her improve in the ring the last couple of times out. You know, Lola Vice definitely has everything that WWE looks for in a wrestler, and she does have the MMA background to help her, which we saw a little bit tonight, and I think while she's still very green and there's still some movement issues for her, that footwork she learned in MMA is going to help her when she does when her body's able to fully kind of embrace pro wrestling and sort of kick away those habits she did have in MMA. But again, with that spin kick, you see some of the things she can bring from her previous background, and what makes her so tantalizing aside from her physical attributes to WWE, because she's like a Rousey Baszler, but in a different way. So kudos, I guess, to all four women, but I wish they would just do more with Leo and Feroz, specifically Feroz, but yeah.
All right. Tiffany Stratton, she went on TikTok and she did not run down Thea Hale. She put her over. I like when a heel finds a way to put over their opponent, even while bragging that they beat them. She said, that little thing took me to my limit or whatever it was. And she said, I'm going to be there next week. And maybe it'll be maybe I'll choose my next opponent. Maybe it'll be a tippy-bration. Maybe it'll just be me doing whatever I want to do. So keeping herself healed there in the end. Azan White emails us as such. Dear NXT crew, number one, why do you think Tiffany Stratton is doing a lot of pre-tapes instead of speaking live? Two, what do you think about Duke Hudson's character work of late? Azan in St. Louis. So I think that Tiffany's doing the pre-tapes because of how good they want her to be. She's been pretty good in these pre-tape segments, and then in front of the crowd, she's been good-ish. I don't think they want her to be good-ish. I really think they want her to be a big, big deal. Could be that for whatever little reason, they had her doing an appearance, had her doing something else, had her working on something else this week. They didn't want her to be out there. They didn't have time, but they had time because it does take a little more time to do an entrance and all the pomp and circumstance of wrestling when you can just throw something up there that was on TikTok and make it very quick. But I, if I had to guess, I would say it's because they want her to be a big deal and they would rather put her in positions to succeed. Whereas sometimes with the ones that are much, much lesser, they just throw them out there, let them sink or swim, and they kind of have them muddle through it. I don't think they want to show those warts with Tiffany. I really think that's the thing. As far as Duke Hudson's character work of late, I will say of late and always, he's always been good. Even when they were doing the character that played a lot of poker, which was silly, like what he's doing now wasn't silly. it was successful. He was committed to it. He seems committed to every part of every role he plays. He's the slightly more heelish guy in a totally babyface faction. But right now, he gets to kind of swap spaces with, I don't know, maybe both of the other two. And now he's the peacekeeper. And he's going to try to be. And outside the ring, he wasn't the focus. But if you made a point to look at him at all during these scenes with Thea, it does seem like he was subtly doing some things that are just like, you got to get over this and everything like that. He's being asked less of this right now because it really is between Thea and Andre. But I think what little he's being asked to do is extremely strong, and he's enhancing them in a non-wrestling way. So I really like what Duke brings to his character. He's always very committed, and that's something that's very true of all three members of Chase U. On this email, Bruce.
Yeah, first, I just checked, and Valerie Lareda, a.k.a. Lola Vice, liked my tweet complimenting her spin kick at the end. So, hey, how you doing, Lola Vice? Hey. So, it's kind of like your liar about Carrie Blacklisted last Sunday, right?
You stopped short of that, as I would hope that we all would on any given week. But what was I to do? It's Blacklisted. It's like my favorite thing that can be worn.
All right, so to Azan's email, on the first part, a lot of it is what I'm gonna what you said. I'll agree with that. I think also that the other thing is she has done okay and sometimes well powering over some of the chants and some of the things that has been directed at her, but there was that one promo right after she won the title where she kind of lost her space or lost her spot and powered through it, but it was still visible. I think they just want to build up her confidence because beyond sort of what you were saying, everything I've heard about Tiffany Stratt is that her character is basically the complete opposite of who she is outside of wrestling or outside the ring or outside of, you know, the presentation, that she's just very likable, very hardworking, very dedicated. And so I think they're trying to do everything they can to make sure that none of that sort of presents itself when she's out there, sort of as a failsafe, just in case, because, you know, I keep saying that, and this is the other thing too, maybe this is, you know, she's complimenting Thea Hill. I keep saying that eventually she's going to be a babyface, and this could be the start of sort of that gradual babyface turn for her. And we were just talking about this with Wesley, right? They like to see what they have on both sides before they move you. I mean, Braun Breaker is still here feuding with Von Wagner of all people because he's a heel and they want to get the most out of his heel work before they make a decision on him when he does move to Raw SmackDown. So to me, it's a factor of building up that confidence and also fiddling with an eventual face turn. Not saying it's going to happen very soon, but this could be that first inkling of where they eventually see her. And maybe by Stand and Deliver, she is a face. And she's facing, say, a heel Blair Davenport for the Women's Championship. But, again, there are multiple reasons for this to happen. And there were already enough in-ring segments as it is with the Judgment Day segment. And you had the Schism segment that having another one probably be in terms of pacing and switching up what's on the show. And then to Duke Hudson, I've been saying since basically he joined Chase U that he's going to turn and try and take over Chase U. he's going to try and take Chase Utley out from under from Andre Chase. And then on Sunday, after the towel was thrown in, I said that I think Hudson is going to use the towel being thrown in by Chase as a way to weasel his way into Hale's mind and then essentially brainwash her into going with him and turning on Chase and taking over Chase U, which we then joked it could be the University of Duke. So I think Duke has done really well. Like you said, even going back to when he was gambling and he lost to Cameron Grimes and all of that, even in such comedic roles, he takes it seriously. He takes it seriously to the point that it's still funny. And so for me, I really like what he's done. And I think this also goes back to him having that random title match with Bron Breakker that he lost in about, no matter what position he's put in, he ensures that he's not just accomplishing his goals, but leaving you with things to, like we're doing right now, discuss his performance. And as a wrestler, the worst thing you can be is forgettable. So I would say his performances throughout the last, I guess, year now have been good because they're always there to build to the next thing.
Dominic Mysterio and Rhea Ripley had a couple of different segments tonight. First of all, they were out in the ring. Dragon Lee came out and forgot a line. What happened with that? I don't know what was going on with that. But
at least he was trying in his second language. I'll give him credit for that.
Yep. And anyway, Dragon Lee wants a match for that, and apparently he's going to get one next week. And Rey Mysterio is going to be in his corner. Good thing he had him queued up on video. What would have happened if they had turned down the match? I don't know. But Rey's going to be there. Booyaka. It's going to be something. Fun fact, when I was selling TVs for 15 years, I would do orders for people and I would have to type in their numbers pretty often while I was living in Phoenix. I would get expats from San Diego, and I would ask them the phone numbers to type in. So to look up their, info, they would say 619. And I would always say booyaka booyaka. And cause with anything else, I was like, yeah. I would always say booyaka, booyaka. And very few people mentioned anything. They would just let it go like, oh, that's just a thing this weirdo does. But every now and then, they'd be like, yes. would be all about it. So there you go. Where was I before I so rudely interrupted myself? They also talked to Axiom. They pretended that they thought Axiom and Dragon Lee were the same person. Just the very kind of thing that a heels would do because they both wear masks. And Mustafa Ali, I just continue to adore his character. He's so self-aggrandizing and doesn't seem to realize the problematic nature of the way he treats people. Like, he's against heels, but always running afoul of faces. And honestly, like, I know there are purists who would say, so which is he? And I'm like, he can just be this. He can be this all the time and it can work. And for me, he doesn't have to choose. I just really, really like this character. But anyway, on Dom and Rhea's busy night.
Yeah. So this is, again, another reason why I think they didn't have to follow up with Lyra, and also why they didn't have to try to do an in-ring promo or even a backstage segment with Mackenzie Mitchell, which I think she only had one, maybe. She had two tonight, I think, which is generally rare for Mackenzie. She kind of has two an hour or so. And then I just threw myself off. Oh, yeah, Rhea Ripley and Dominic Mysterio, right. So they continue to just be a joy to watch on TV, and you can tell people show up just to boo Dominic Mysterio, and that kind of heat, again, is something you can't just teach or bottle, right? It's something that he came about by just being a prickish son, and it works, and people are literally paying money just to go and boo him. and the smarminess with which he basically took all the credit for beating Mustafa Ali and Wesley on Sunday, and then saying that he made the Mysterio name famous. It's just, I think what topped it was his reaction when Rey Mysterio showed up on the screen, just like, oh, my God, he can't be serious right now. So I think they're just doing great. And Ripley, first, is like, God damn. And then two, it's, she just has such a commanding presence, no matter what show she's on, that you can't take your eyes away from her, and you want to listen to what she says and see what she has to do. That kind of presence. I just go back to what you said. You talk about being the Charlotte Flair clone and the first Mae Classic to this. It's just, and it hasn't even been a decade, and it's just amazing to see what sort of transformation she's undergone and how she's basically become the top woman in WWE. Just everything is working right with her. She's the leader of Judgment Day. It's not Finn. It's not Damian. It's not Dominic. And so they had a busy night, but everything they do serves a purpose. And again, it served to not only set up the match next week with Dragon Lee and bring in Rey Mysterio, but they also set up a potential feud, not just between Dominic and Axiom, but with Axiom and Mustafa Ali. So a lot of working parts that all flow together well, because Mustafa Ali has a legitimate gripe about that North American Championship match on Sunday because he did not take the pin. So if anyone should get the next title shot, it should be him, when it was originally going to be his singles match at the GAB in the first place. So there are these moving parts all work storyline, and there's no like really big stretch to get there. Axiom just, you know, I guess you could say that Axiom showing up is a bit of a stretch, but he's trying to get recognition. In the past, his goal was to become North American champion, so you do have that connection there as well. So I just think what they're doing with Judgment Day each week, it's just the right amount, and they're doing so much within that time that it makes me appreciative for them being on the show and working them into the storylines as they've done the past two or so months.
All right. Let's go to Roxanne Perez goes to Austin. Probably something she does a lot, well, with her being from there. So we saw her reunite with her family beforehand. She played some arcade games with Wes Lee, apparently. So that's cool. And then
DreamCon.
Yeah. And then had one of the world's dumbest feud continuers at DreamCon. So, and then we just saw that going into the match. She had the Weapons Wild match, as it were, and she won that. And she, you know, she's still not like a great shakes on the mic, but it's kind of like a Cora Jade thing where the mic skills are coming along so slowly, it's hard to appreciate just where she was in the beginning. So yeah, I guess that one was big enough. Maybe it gets its own segment from us.
Yeah, what I do like is, even though she's still not the best on the mic, she's not shying away from trying to show that emotion, that frustration, that anger. And she's not the heel in terms of, you got to bring it back, you still got to get a little more out of her. But each week she is getting better. I think they were smart in terms of having the segment tonight be something that they could tape at the end of Great American Bash on Sunday, and they could edit or do multiple takes if they have it done here. And also, something that I saw in Wade's report last night, and I've been advocating for this when we've been on the show, is it didn't seem like it was that long post-match when they did that interview with her that ended the video just by end. I think about, there used to be a lot of, you know, in-ring interviews, a quick question or two, whether or on the stage, or they all of a sudden, you know, maybe after a segment, they go to the back and the person who was just in the match, the winner or the loser is there and they're going to say something. I think that adds a bit of a sense of realism. And, you know, the famous Austin 316 speech was right after he beat Jake the Snake Roberts for King of the Ring. Like, there was no rest between really him going from the ring to there. So I think having some more of those, like they did with Roxanne Perez, even though it was edited, I think that one, it'll be, it helps with keeping things fresh, having a different pacing and tying things together, but also separating yourself, your show from other shows, because not everyone is doing those post-match in-ring or on the stage sort of in interviews with the winners or the losers about what's next, what's happening, et cetera. You see it in MMA all the time. You see it in boxing all the time. So I think that's something that needs to be incorporated more, because you only need 30 seconds to a minute. You don't need a lot longer than that. And you can pull a minute from a match. You can pull 10 seconds from this many. I think there are ways to do this that doesn't make it imposing and where it would actually add to the show.
Schism interrogated the masked Schism people. I put it off as long as I could, but we've got to talk about it. Yeah, they apparently interrogate means ask to take mask off. that's what happened here. We got limited mic time from all of them, but they made sure to give Ava a cherry spot. She just can't talk. I don't understand why it's so flat. You don't always pick up what your parents had, but I just, you'd expect more of this based on the fact that you could be there to work with her. I want it to come together. I really want it to come together badly, but I just don't know. And is there a better place for her than Schism? I don't know that either. Like, I know people are down on Schism and there are reasons, but I feel like trying to get something out of her on the mic that can be fairly minimal, I think she's in the exact right place. I think this is the spot you want her in. But anyway, she has them take off their masks. First two guys are just dudes. The third one is Ikem and Jiro, injecting some life into the scene that was dead on arrival. Always good to see him, but it was just a goof for him. And that's that. They send off the fourth one because obviously it wasn't him, because they got attacked by white guys. And then there's two white guys left that look like they could be the Creeds. The Julius clone looks more like Julius than the Brutus guy does Brutus. But if you didn't look really, really close, or if you had not, for instance, recapped these guys over and over. So, of course, the Creeds show up on the green screen, say they're definitely not in Orlando, and pretend they're sunbathing in front of a very obvious green screen. And this is, I don't know, I guess it's fine, but it seems a little heelish for them. But whatever. Maybe I'm overreacting because I want so much for these guys. The world, in fact, I want for the Brothers Creed, Bruce.
I'll hit this part, then I'll get to the interrogation. With the Creed brothers, if they had to leave NXT, why were they filming that inside of NXT with Ivy Nile most likely flipping the images of where they were? That, you know, that aside, the green, I thought that was hilarious with the green screen. Brutus's terrible job of sunscreen application to his arms, where it was still just white patches everywhere all over because he didn't rub it in all the way and whatnot. But interrogation segment. What should they have called this? The Schism's family meeting? The Schism's intervention, maybe? Because this was not an interrogation. It was more like a physical assault, honestly. But yeah.
The Schism unmasked with an exclamation point.
There we go.
Yeah, or Schism luchas de apuestas. Because that's a match where the loser has to lose their mask or their hair.
Or Schism, who actually cares about us. So the segment itself, okay. Drake and Gibson were the only saving graces. Gacy did have a lot of intensity at the end, but, you know, they just weren't any of the BS. I said Drake and Gibson, didn't I?
I let it go because I want him to be named that so badly that it was fine with
so, Reed and Fowler, and going back to an earlier email from I think it was Kitani, maybe they did resign, but they resigned as grizzled young veterans and not as the dyad. So hopefully that's the case. But yeah, Ava just it's a struggle to watch because it's watch. I'm not a trained actor or anything like that, but watching her, even I can tell that. She's just waiting for the spot that she's supposed to come in and say her lines. And then she tries to deliver them with conviction, but it's just not the greatest delivery. So I was trying to think of a comparison of someone who debuted early and then went away from some time and came back as a completely different character and went on to be fairly successful, depending on how you want to term success. And I think Paris in here for her, because I think what they should do is just kind of write her off, give her time to develop and improve off screen, away from the lights, away from the cameras. I look at someone like, and he was still better at the point that he debuted, but there was this guy named Nikki in the Spirit Squad. And the Spirit Squad, they had some moments, but it was a Spirit Squad after a little bit. All of a sudden, we get this guy named Dolph Ziggler, and he went on to be a world heavyweight champion multiple times, intercontinental champion, Money in the Bank winner, and Lamont Wade just hit a go-ahead home run in the bottom of the seventh, go Giants. I think that's a good comparison for her because, again, he was more skilled, but I think she needs that time away and to come back completely different, separated from what she is with Schism, and I think in the long run, that's going to be better, not just for her, but also for WWE. So I don't know if they would do that because of how integral she's been to TV. She's basically on TV every week with Schism, and if it's not Schism, her and just Joe Gacy. But that's what I would advocate for them to do with Ava.
All right, and that reminded me that I had to look to see what the Twins did because they were just on now. The losing streak's over. Oh, what a relief! They were
Your
9-2
over 500.
Yeah, they were 9-2 coming out of the break, and they were 6 games up, and that's the highest they've been all year. And then they immediately celebrated by losing 5.
Well, it was interesting because they whooped the Mariners in Minnesota, and they got whooped by the Mariners in Seattle. So yeah.
And the Mariners, they're about the same in terms of talent. Like we've been like records about the same. So it's. No surprise there, but you want
but
more.
But the Mariners ended July with the bet. The Mariners went July 1 to July 31st, tied for the best record in Major League Baseball. So I think only the Orioles, I think the Orioles and them had the tied for the best record in July.
Have to be done. Yeah, so, okay. Yeah, it feels slightly better.
Yeah, go Giants.
not that the Cardinals are any good, which is really weird to say, but they're not.
They're very, very, very much so.
Okay, getting to wrestling, I suppose. Metaphor ran afoul of Tyler Bate. Always nice to see Tyler when he just takes a month off after a feud. I want to see him all the time. And this is what they do with him every time. He shows up like, remember me? Let's have a feud. And so he challenged Noam Dar to the quote unquote Heritage Cup. I love that they put the quotes on this on the screen. It is an inspired bit of buffoonery, and it's going to be even more inspired when Tyler Bate takes a second Heritage Cup from him next week.
Quote.
Yeah, and they could have there's reasons for both of them to win. If Noam Dar wins this, then, you know, he can have his match with the real Heritage Cup champion down the road. But I think it would just be funnier to see him completely devolve into even more madness as there's 2 Heritage Cups out there and neither one is his. Yeah. And then we had Bron Breakker cutting on Von Wagner and Cora Jade. She's had enough. And that is the show that we saw. So anything on those 3 segments?
Yeah. Just Noam Dar is a gift. Tyler Bate is also a gift, and I like how he pointed out that his nameplate for winning the Heritage Cup is right next to Noam Dar's most recent nameplate for winning the cup, and how he's going to take that from him. And this could lead to a, I guess, a Heritage Cup unification bout with Nathan Frazer for the real, kind of like a Shawn Michaels, Razor Ramon thing from 94 to 95. And if that's the case, cool. I'm all for it because all three of these wrestlers are very fun to watch. All three of these wrestlers are very fun to watch in British rounds matches. So to me, any combination of these three for the eventual unification, I'm assuming they're going to have a unification bout. I'm all for it. I just love what they do. I love that not only is Noam Dar out there doing things every week, but and having fun and whatnot, but he doesn't try to steal the spotlight when he's on TV, especially with his group. He tries to make sure that everyone in the group has their moments, and I really appreciate that because be the one soaking up all the air, and I guess in a sense you could say that's what Trick Williams' sort of thing with Carmelo Hayes tonight was about. But with Metaphor, just, they all always do something every week that makes them stand out to you, even if there's one little thing. So, and then Cora Jade, I feel like they need to turn the corner sometime because this seems like it's been going on for a long time with her. Did she find the killer instinct? Did she not? Or did we? It's just been undetermined to me what the end goal is for her right now. And, you know, is she supposed to be a heel challenger for an eventual babyface strand? Maybe. Is she just going to move to Raw or SmackDown? I think that's more likely. Still, what is the end game? And I'm not sure if they know what the end game is with Cora Jade right now. And that, to me, is kind of what's keeping me... You all know I wasn't the biggest Cora Jade fan when she was a babyface to begin with, but she's showing more as a heel, and I think there is potential here, but I'm just not sure. I don't feel attached because I don't think there's a path that they understand or they have for her beyond we're just going to have her on TV now and then. Win or lose some matches and go from there. I want them to show a definite sort of end goal for her in some sort of story because right now I don't think there is that with her, and that's just holding me back a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think it's time for her to move up necessarily. I don't know that she's ready to swim with the sharks, but I guess she could be peaking. At some point, you got to make that call. It's like with Raquel Rodriguez. I remember Wade saying, "Has she been getting better?" And I said, "Oh no, she was literally as good the day she walked in as she is now. She has not changed. She has not grown. She has not gotten better. She has not gotten worse. She's just the same kind of okay wrestler she was in every aspect. Some of them just peak, and they're already there." Which to me speaks to, like, do you want that person who's not, okay, I'm not going to get all negative at the end of this podcast. Whatever. Yeah. Wither Cora Jade, folks. That's what I wanted to think about this week. Wither Cora Jade. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games, Bruce.
I am Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it at B_Lee253. And just a reminder, Kelly, Vic Joseph is married to Mackenzie Mitchell.
Why? I mean, why would you do this? Why? And why would she do it? All right. We'll see you in 7, folks. Cheers. I didn't have a stinger, so that worked.
Yeah. Well, hey, just got to leave them with something, right?
Yeah. I write down my stingers most of the time. I'm like, oh, this is going to be an awesome callback in about an hour.
But not tonight, and I saved you.
Yep. And it probably would have been black lipstick if I had needed one, but we had already burned that. So.
Shit. Well, all right, Kelly. Thanks, man. Have a good night, and I'll keep you updated.
Sounds good. We'll see you.
All right. See you.